some extent, it's going to sound like we're layering over the same territory, but from somewhat different perspectives. And I appreciate Ron's point, because the reason that I was excited about the opportunity to bring this up today is not to show what is happening, but to invite the people who have energy and ideas and a breadth of exposure to help us identify how to move it ahead. It's what's undone that's really the most important thing that we're going to be telling you today, and then you're going to be telling us how to get it done and how you're going to help with that, I think. I think we need to acknowledge that practitioners both are very much the most important potential users of this and maybe one of the biggest barriers to doing this and to using it. And so I want to talk about why I am committed to this and believe that practitioners really need to be supported in being more invested, talk a little bit about some of the reasons that they're not or may not be in all cases, and then at least a few suggestions to start some discussion about how we might overcome some of those barriers or at least jumpstart some things. The reason practitioners need to be concerned, for one thing, we have very scarce resources. Public health is too important to be doing badly or suboptimally. We just don't have enough resources to be muddling them about in ways that are not really benefiting the people in our communities that we're trying to serve. There's also now the issue of the dialogue about accountability in government. Even county governments are saying, if I give you this much more money, what would you actually produce with that? What good would it do my community? And then too often they're saying, my budget is tight, I'm going to take money away from you. You tell me which programs I can cut and do the least harm with, or how do I even know that it matters if I take money away from your program? That is a discussion that people in the practice community, unfortunately, are having almost every year, and in some cases almost every month. We don't have good answers to that, and I know at least a few states, including the one I'm in currently, where you could look at the budget in the last 10 years, and environmental health was almost gutted in Oregon because nobody could say that it made any difference because they couldn't show that people were getting sick from drinking water outbreaks, so why did it matter if we quit inspecting our drinking water systems? That's a particularly egregious case, but it's not unrelated. It's already been mentioned we're looking at accreditation. I've been really split about the value of moving ahead in accreditation right now for public health agencies. I'm a strong believer in measuring, analyzing, and improving. And as a quality improvement process, I really think we need to move in that direction. But my fear is that a lot of our standards are going to be created by what we have been referring to as expert opinion and best practices. And I have watched with concern how these best practices have been identified. A group of people like me get in a room and we all nod at the same time. And that does not feel like science. You know, if public health is about evidence-based practice, I don't think that has actually served us terribly well. But, you know, that's going to be the starting place for too many of the standards in accreditation. And we need to go into this very cautiously and very honestly, putting right up front that, you know, in order to measure something, in order to see if it makes things better, you've got to start right building in from the beginning that this is a question, it's not an answer. So I think accreditation is something we need to move ahead on, but if there's not a really strong research connection to that, I'm afraid we may be creating an illusion of improvement rather than real improvement. I believe in the importance of increasing the engagement between the practice community and the academic community, and I think this is a very concrete way to do that. I think, for one thing, it will improve the potential training for future workers. The academic community in public health is more divorced from training people for practice than any other profession. You know, a law school where only 20% of the people went into legal practice, that would be considered disgraceful or at least bizarre. In public health, that's the case. The people we produce in the academic community, there are some programs, individual programs, where that's not the case, but across the field, 20% or so people who graduate with public health degrees go into practice. There's something odd about that, and I think it's a wasted opportunity both directions. So I think this very practically brings more engagement. It also increases the visibility and the relevance of public health education and training to people currently in the field who are not currently trained. So the value for people who work, we have, again, Oregon's not unusual in this regard. Out of 34 local health departments, only 4 of our health officers have any public health training of any kind. And that's not that rare. I think that's a problem as well, but they say they don't see it as relevant to what they do. It needs to be relevant, and it's more relevant than they currently know, but they will see that more when it starts making sense and they meet people in the academic community who listen and talk in ways that make sense to them. So this I think seeds to some much bigger value over time. We are looking at workforce issues. Glenn had referenced that he's talking about measuring what the changes in the workforce. There are also initiatives in directly planning what our future workforce needs to look like. We need to answer some questions about how we construct health departments. What does it matter if you have someone who has a business degree, a public health degree, or a medical degree in leadership positions in a health department? We have, I think the line often between service research and systems research in public health is a fine line. And again, with scarce resources in a WIC program or in a clinic setting, can we use paraprofessionals? Can we use people who have been trained on the job to do certain functions, maybe in some ways more effectively if they also come from the language or the culture of the people you're trying to serve than having a nurse or a nurse practitioner or a nutritionist who are scarce and expensive relative to these resources? The answers to questions like that set the stage for our workforce planning, not just measuring what is going to happen passively, but can we actively direct it? There are lots of risks from a practitioner perspective in engaging this. The political risk is high. And the personal emotional risk is high. People have dedicated their lives to doing something that we may show wasn't really terribly effective. And that is very hard. You can understand that people don't invite you in to help prove that what they've been doing all their careers is not real effective. We've got to find a way to deal with that, because if we focus on the improvement and the opportunity, most of them will get there. But that, I see that. That is very real. Changing a model of how we deliver services is quite threatening for people who have been doing this for 15, 20 years. There's a political risk as well. What you've been doing isn't really all that effective, so why should I fund you to do anything else or trust anything else you say? We are in an era where if something doesn't work, it's an off with whoever's head is that, the most visible representative to that. And that it takes some laying of the groundwork to say this is a positive, active, professional endeavor that shows that we are worthwhile rather than that shows that we haven't known what we've been doing all this time. You really have to set the stage for that. I think there's a wariness of using health services research or health medical care research as a model. Public health in general is really trying to move toward being identified as a population base, and anything that looks like we're being cornered back into look-alike with the clinical services, I think, is in many cases really quite threatening and problematic. And that's not to say it isn't an important technique to work from, but again, I think the vocabulary and the resistance that creates are difficult. When you start with not enough resources, adding one more kind of fancy window dressing on top of it is challenging. And unless we explicitly provide the resources and the requirements, frankly, that there be participation in these things, but the resources need to be there, because you can't take a program that's already struggling and add something like this where the value is remote, not immediate, and expect people to take it really seriously and have a strong commitment to that. And the skills issues as well. We haven't been trained to do this in the practice community, and it's not a come in and sort of chide us or reveal our ignorance, but really using this as a practice skills development opportunity in a very positive way that says that it will be enhancing your value. this, I haven't seen a lot of the systems set up to provide that, to recognize that there is a real skills support and development process that has to be part of doing this. People in practice are interested in the accountability, and they are interested in accreditation. So I think this is a very good time for us to be having this. I also think there's something that supports moving ahead very strongly. One of my other hobbies, I'm on the Council on Education for Public Health, which accredits schools and programs of public health. And I have thought it was really important, being a practitioner with an opportunity to try to influence how programs and schools of public health are evaluated. The last revision of the criteria that schools and programs are held accountable to has moved very strongly, not probably far enough, but very strongly toward requiring schools and programs to show they work with practitioners, they assess and help train practitioners, and that they're doing research that is practical and that is that has partnerships with their practitioners. So for those of you who are in academic community, beware, because if your school or program are not doing those, you're going to get dinged. But for the people in the practice community, this is a language. This is something that is of real interest to the academic community, and it's, I think, having both carrots and sticks is always really valuable in bringing about change of human behavior systems. So this is, I think, a really important pressure for all of that. And I look forward to hearing how it is we're going to make this better. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Well, you've heard from our panelists, and there are lots of questions out there, lots of opportunities, and I like to think of hurdles versus challenges that we need to be overcoming. What I'd like you to be thinking about right now, as we open up for some discussion, is what can you do as individual researchers, as individual practitioners, to address some of the many issues that have been raised today, to advance the field, to help it move beyond where it is. And I'd like us to take off the table funding, because we know we need that. And frankly, we've done this public health systems research, systems research session for, I guess this is now our sixth year of doing a session. Last year at this time was the swan song for the Council on Linkages, where we were handing over this issue to Academy Health, which Academy Health has taken on quite well.
We're not providing champagne like you did.
No champagne, right. And last year we did that because the Council on Linkages no longer had funding, and so we needed to leave this issue in good hands. The Council actually does have funding now, thank you to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, but our focus is primarily now on redoing the core competencies for public health professionals, as well as helping to define the public health pipeline. While public health systems research will remain an issue of the Council, again, it's this group and it's the rest of you who will keep advancing this. So as you're thinking about what you can do as individuals to address these issues and questions that you have for our panelists, because I'm sure you may have lots of questions, what I'd like to do is actually call on Doug Scutchfield for a moment. And why am I doing this? Well, in addition to Dr. Scutchfield being prominent in this field and one of the people who really helped to get it moving, Dr. Scutchfield also has taken on the responsibility of saying there are things that I can do to advance this field. And one of the issues is the data harmonization one. And maybe you can talk a little bit about this issue and why it came up and why it's important and what you're doing.
Back up by saying that one of the things I think that's important to all of us in the field is having the basic research tools, which largely is data. And what, in fact, one of the problems we've had consistently had in the discipline that we have not had data that allow us to do the kinds of research that we'd like to have done. There are two things that we're doing to address that. One is that, again, the good offices of Robert Johnson on the National Library of Medicine, in
thank you for your work. So we've heard from one individual about actually some of the hurdles that were described in terms of data. You know, already we have the effort to bring the various data sets together so they can be accessible to researchers, and also the data harmonization piece so that we can actually have good comparable data across states, locals, and governance bodies. What thoughts do all of you have about what you can do? Questions, again, that you have for the panelists? Start with Lou.
Yeah. Susan, as I was listening to you, there's a subtle difference in the way you presented what you have to say, and I want to pick up on one piece of it. I think one of the difficulties in public health systems, systems research is it's not systems research. That is, the methodology that we presently use to conduct this research is much more traditional. And one of the things we're learning in the training of the public health workforce is that we really need to revise and look at the way we do research differently. And we need to be doing research at a systems level, which will require changes in the methodology and the way that we carry out the types of research that we do. Because I think that the narrow view that traditional methodology does is it doesn't really show us all of the elements that are going to be very critical in understanding how public health system works, but within the context of a community where public health and the public health agency is only one player in a very complex social process.
Okay. Michael, and then this one.
Well, I want to thank everybody. This has been a very interesting set of presentations. It's been very helpful. I'd like to begin with a distinction, I think, between research about public health and research for public health. I think that maybe relates in part to what Lou was talking about. A lot of what I think that the field has done, PHSR has done, is modeled on what we've been for hospitals. We understand, you know, we get data, we say, what are the characteristics of structure and financing and resources that lead to better outcomes when we kind of switch the unit from a hospital to a health department. And I think that's important and fruitful and will continue to be fruitful. But the other side that I think probably needs more help is in maybe operational research for public health. Or maybe it's about public health processes or quality improvement and so on. It's how can we improve what health departments do or public health systems more broadly do to achieve the goals they're intended to achieve. And I think there's actually a lot of opportunity for health departments to collaborate, or faculty to collaborate with health departments in this, because there's a need for this. Academics have skills that can help with this. And I think that we ought to look at that as an opportunity as well.
Any comments or reactions?
I appreciate what you said. It sounds exactly right. I was waiting for you to tell us how to make it happen.
Well,
good job. Well, a real health official.
Okay, I'll say a couple things. One is you mentioned in the accreditation standards that this is going to be rewarded. I think that's important thing to do. Another one is that behind me, my colleagues at Georgetown, who used to be your colleagues at Arlington, who share a job, and because of that have facilitated me getting involved in some of the activities. And I think that would take me much more of that.
Could I ask a follow-up question?
Of course.
jumping back on that as well. I think another opportunity that exists now, I think, in academia, in the in academic health research centers, is the push that primarily NIH has led now toward translational research. And I think there's a home for public health systems research, and there's a way of characterizing this body of research in terms of helping to make that translation from discovering these interventions that work and actually how do we get them to the population to get them to the
problem.
I think there's certainly a lot more we need to do, but I think that conversation starting maybe to tip the balance toward appreciating a broader set of research activities.
Okay. We're going to go here, here, and here.
I'll identify myself.
Thank you. And I think that's for you. Oh, Scutch, you have an answer to that?
One of the points that I made in the stakeholders meeting that Kate was talking about earlier is the importance of the development of logic models that allow us to do exactly that. Bring up an old and very dear friend, Heinrich Bloom, clearly was a very visionary about public health systems.
He was indeed, yeah.
But the point is, in fact, we're not yet quite where Heinrich was at that one time. Nevertheless, we're coming to that. Put out some ideas and use them in development
is going to be based in academic institutions, practice organizations?
Good question. You know, we really struggle with this academic practice divide, and the PBRNs, again, we're trying to use that as a vehicle for breaking down that divide. The way these networks are going to be structured, the lead agency, you know, where the funding will actually go, will be a practice-based agency, a state or local public health agency that's designed to kind of be the lead agency for their network. So we're placing the resources and a lot more of that control of the resources in the hands of the practice agency. They're expected to then involve
maybe you want to address what Academy Health is doing in this area.
Well, ideas like that we're always looking for, because we try to conduct webcasts, sort of bring research into the hands of practitioners, and so I'm jotting this down because I'm always looking for new ideas, so thanks for sharing that.
Okay,
well,
Susan?
And I also wanted to suggest that you push NACHO on this issue. NACHO has come a much longer way in realizing this as a legitimate need of the practice community and of having an open door to the involvement, but it's still in process. They don't really have a project or an actual home for it. But if they hear from their membership that people are looking for this, they will either adopt it or they'll establish the formal linkages to it. And then you've just created something that a lot of your peers would, it would come to them in their terms as well. So I'm glad you're doing that, and I think if you really make that as a visible request on behalf of local public health, that NACHO is at a good place for starting to hear something.
And Kate mentioned about that she was jotting things down. I've been jotting notes down feverishly. Also, Ruth Gellis, who's a new staff person for the Council on Linkages, has been doing that as well. And after this meeting, we're hoping that we'll be able to sit down with Academy Health and have some discussions about, okay, here's some great information that came out of the discussions today. How do we use it? How can we advance it? Hugh Tilson, who has led the efforts for the Council on Linkages for the past 5 years, was unable to be here today, but he told me that I should mention that he's interested in getting this back on the agenda for the council, which is why we're taking notes feverishly. Because for those of you who know Hugh Tilson, if he says that it should be on the agenda, I have little doubt that it will absolutely be on the agenda, which is good, which is good. Yes.
I also wanted to mention
just about out of time. Let's give a quick one, Lou.
Yeah, the Susan and I were both at a meeting on Sunday at the Public Health Leadership Society, and I think a very critical issue in public health systems research is to know who your friends are. And part of knowing who your friends are is the fact that there have been a number of specialty organizations beyond nature, like the Public Health Leadership Society, National Leadership Network. These are the people that are the leaders in the field who are talking public health systems research at this point in time, in addition to what training programs and so forth should look like. It seems to me that this is the time to figure out a way to bring your friends together to really discuss what the agenda should look like for public health systems research from the practitioner, the academic, and the research side. And I think we have to be careful that it's not so narrow that you're going to lose the support of the people that you're going to really need to help implement this program.
Good point.
Absolutely.
Well, I think all of you were amazingly disciplined because you did not talk about funding. So thank you very much. We did talk about operational issues, data issues, logic model, training, the practice-based research networks. A whole variety of topics came up, which I think can really advance our field tremendously. Last comments. One is, if you're not already part of the Academy Health Public Health Systems Research Interest Group and would like to be, it's free. And I'm sure Kate would be delighted to either take a business card or, you know, write down your email address. If you're interested in keeping up to date on Council on Linkages activities, we'd be happy to have a business card or give Ruth or myself your email address. And most importantly, I'd like to thank very much our distinguished panelists for really getting us off to an incredibly lively, useful discussion. And also thank you, the three of you, for your work in this field, because it has been tremendous. So thank you all very much.